fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Good evening, afternoon, morning, depending on where you are. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio, coming at you live in August of 2022. We have an exciting show for you today. We are going to be joined in a few moments by Jerome Corsi, American author, best-selling New York Times author. I've known Jerry for years, decades, going back to the Unfit for Command book he did on then presidential candidate John Kerry, who later became climate envoy, Secretary of State. Jerome Corsi is one of the great American authors, and he will be joining us to talk about climate, energy, and the whole kit and caboodle. But I just wanted to give you a quick news update here in America. This week, Joe Biden has finally got through using a little bit of deception, and the media is now praising this, his climate bill. But of course, journalists are celebrating the climate bill deception. Quote, rebranding this legislation as inflation reduction was a brilliant piece of marketing. So yes, America is now going to be saddled with a, in the end, probably a multi-trillion dollar climate bill that's going to try to save the planet. And we've had people say that Bill McKibben, climate activist, friend of Al Gore, if this bill failed, there would be a geologic era named after Senator Manchin. This is when Joe Manchin didn't support it. But now that it's passed, Al Gore is praising it. Paul Krugman of the New York Times is saying we may have saved humanity. So a pork barrel spending bill you never knew had this much power. And around the world, more insanity under the guise of sticking it to Putin continues. The Green New Deal in action. Businesses in Spain have to leave summer air conditioning 80 degrees Fahrenheit or above. No longer can you actually set the air conditioner to as you see fit. And this will also apply to the heater this winter. We are facing absolute energy crisis. There's reports out that there's going to be literally a serious deficit of just actual energy available to Europeans this winter. How did this happen? How did we get to this point? Aha! That leads us to our guest for this hour. Jerome Corsi, again, he has a new book out. This is a best-selling author, and he has a brand new book out. And I should know about this is the truth about energy, global warming, and climate change, exposing climate lies in the age of disinformation. And you can see this book if you go to climatedepot.com, top left of the website, very top of the website. This book was just dropped on July 26, 2022. I wrote the foreword to this book. And Jerome Corsi has graciously dedicated his book to me, The Truth About Energy and Global Warming and Climate Change. It is one of the most comprehensive, in fact, the most comprehensive read on the underlying factors of the science of climate change, the underlying factors of energy and energy policy, the politics behind this. And currently, it is number one bestseller in environmental policy and ranking incredibly well in other Amazon categories. This book is getting out there. This is the book to have, The Truth About Energy, Global Warming, and Climate Change, Exposing the Climate Lies in the Age of Disinformation. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Jerome Corsi to the program. Good morning, Jerry. How are you doing?
Mark, it's great to be with you. Thank you. And I'm honored to be on the show. And I'm thank you. You know, I really wanted to dedicate this book to you because you've been a warrior on this whole climate hoax, the global warming hoax, for a long time. And going back to when you were working with Senator Inhofe in the Senate, as I distinctly remember, you have championed this cause. You've fought for it. You've been thrown out of more international climate meetings than I think I remember being held. So you are you have walked the walk, and I tried to walk it with you. And hopefully this book advances the cause.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And your book is truly a testament to debunk how to counter a mainstream science political narrative that's being thrown upon us. So just before we get into actual book, I mean, what's your comment on Joe Biden's big climate bill that Joe Manchin caved on, and then we'll lead that into your book. I mean, I want to start with this current event. So we have Joe Manchin caved, Kristen Sinema supports it. This bill is going to be, they're calling it the Inflation Reduction Act, and it's also a massive IRS expansion at the same time. And now you have Al Gore, climate activist, basically saying it has saved the earth. Paul Krugman in the New York Times, the New York Times today suggests that Democrats may have saved civilization with this climate bill. And in fact, he actually says, did Democrats just save civilization? Krugman responded, they really did it. So does this bill, given what your book is out, Harrington, out today, does this bill save civilization? And what does this climate bill do in America?
Well, it's a complete fraud. I mean, the Biden administration has now used car salesmen a reason to feel good about themselves. It's completely misnomered. It is not. It's really the Inflation Causing Act. I have an article up right now on American Thinker, and the title of it is Democratic President Again Wastes Taxpayer Money on Useless Renewables. So my take on this is we've already been through this. This is a redo of the Obama administration, and we seem to have very short memory in this country, but Obama, given his 2009 Recovery Act, remember there was going to be all these shovel-ready jobs. It included $368 billion. You know, that's what Biden's going to spend now. Well, that actually much more than that was spent by Obama. Kind of ironically, September 4th, 2009, Joe Biden, as vice president, was one who got to announce the Department of Energy had just finalized a $535 million loan guarantee to Solyndra. That was the company that was going to produce green energy from solar power. I don't know what's green about solar power, but that's only another ideological tag, because green's supposed to be good, and solar then becomes green, even though the sun is, as far as I can tell, a little bit yellow these days, at any rate. And by the way, we'll get to the point, but that, you know, when you go outside and you look up in the sky and you see that big burning yellow thing, it is not a tree ornament. It is the major cause of Earth's temperature and light. And it is what drives temperature on the Earth, not carbon dioxide, but we'll get to that. Let me stay on the Solyndra point. Biden was very enthusiastic about this money, but of course then, 2 years later, almost exactly 2 years later, September 6, 2011, Solyndra declared bankruptcy. And they laid off 1,000 workers. They did not provide the solar power to heat some 30,000 homes that they promised. And in fact, when analyzing all of these projects that Obama funded that failed remarkably, Peter Schweitzer of the Government Accountability Project in Washington documented about 80% of the money that Obama spent, billions of dollars, on dozens of these wind and solar projects. The money went to primarily 80% of it to those who were on Obama's finance committee for his 2008 presidential run. So first of all, the projects went bankrupt. None of the solar, none of the wind power that Obama funded is today functioning. It's all now solar junk, windmill junk. And Obama, of course, walked away. No one was prosecuted and the money was gone. So we've done this before. And while it didn't work under Obama, the selective memory is being used again to say, well, now Biden is going to save the world. And now we have another, $368 billion for green energy spending, Inflation Reduction Act, which is going to spend again, I don't know, maybe $1 trillion we don't have. And remember, we were promised under this modern monetary theory that spending trillions in deficit spending would not cause inflation. That was promised when Biden took office.
Yes.
And today we're in double-digit inflation. Classic economics applies. You can't put billions and trillions of dollars that we are borrowing into the economy. Our debt now is doubled and tripled since President George W. Bush was in office. And we're really becoming a bankrupt country and funding these complete boondoggle projects. Just to make one simple point about renewable energy, Mark, if you had a battery the size of a flashlight battery that could store solar or wind energy that would power a metropolitan area, you would not need government subsidies in order to put that in effect all around the world. Corporations would jump at that in a second, and they would leapfrog right over hydrocarbon fuels because it would be a powerful alternative. The fact is that the solar and wind powers are not as effective forms of energy. Combustible, with hydrocarbon fuels, you combust it. So the energy potion, as measured by physicists, of hydrocarbon fuel is high, whereas wind and solar have to be stored. It's electric energy is being generated, and it can't be used immediately. The storage reduces, it saps energy away from what was originally gained. It's got to be stored. The storage is expensive. Often, in fact, electric vehicles uses rare minerals that are hard to mine and polluting to mine, creating batteries that are going to have to be disposed, another pollution problem. And by and large, the electricity being used to power electric vehicles comes from hydrocarbon fuels. So we really have here a proven technologies. Yes, you can put a solar panel on your house and generate some electricity. Might be worthwhile in terms of your budget, depending on how much you had to pay or the government pay for that solar panel. But around the world, unless the governments are subsidizing solar and wind with taxpayer money, private enterprise stays away from renewable fuels because it doesn't work. And today, people are, because of the inflation, and this bill will cause massive additional inflation, families in the middle class are being squeezed. I believe that's intentional. I believe this entire thing is designed, and my book demonstrates this. I devote three chapters to showing that the environmental movement is now a neo-Marxist movement, and its real reason for existing is to destroy capitalism. Finally, the neo-Marxists have found something that might destroy capitalism. Karl Marx, it didn't work for him when he was writing in the 1800s. It hasn't really worked as capitalism was initially described ever. But the point is, by demonizing carbon dioxide, which is what this is all about, because hydrocarbon fuels generate carbon dioxide, they emit carbon dioxide. If we can demonize carbon dioxide and have children taught this in the school, mommy and daddy, you're killing me. I won't have a future because you are so stupid and mean that you're putting gasoline in your car. And that's ugly, awful stuff. And it's destroying the environment. Okay. And then abandoning hydrocarbon fuels, which have largely stimulated the growth in world population, the prosperity of capitalism, the ability to have abundance, which can be worldwide, by depriving us of the most powerful and readily available energy that can be burned cleanly, hydrocarbon fuels, we are going to intentionally force the world into a lower standard of living, destroy the middle class. That's what Biden's up to. And this will create what the environmental movement originally wanted with the Malthusians, who have always said we have too many people, we need to kill people. So you've got now the hard left embracing this agenda, knowing that renewable fuels won't work, but it will end up achieving some of their Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum objectives, which is to reduce world population by maybe a half, maybe more, while they, the elite, rich, multinational corporations, have all the resources to themselves, they think, flying around in their private planes, nobody to bother them, and there will be these elite oligarchs and the Klaus Schwab Club, the Bill Gates Club, owning all the food, owning all the, and denying hydrocarbon fuels to a population that could thrive with them through capitalism, independent free enterprise. And this whole scheme is, again, to convince Americans who are not well educated on climate science to voluntarily walk into their own enslavement. This is a suicidal, economic suicide is what we're committing right now as a nation.
Well, very, very, very well said. And on your point about population, I interviewed Hans Schulenhuber, the German climate advisor, at a UN climate summit a few years ago. It was in Germany. And he literally is the one who said that the carrying capacity of the Earth is only about 1 billion people. And I think we currently have 7.8 billion. So that's, you know, you can do the numbers. Their ideal world is only is about 6 billion, 6.5, almost 7 billion less than what we have currently. And then, of course, Al Gore was at a Bill Gates-funded event where he lamented that Africa was going to have a population bigger than China and India. And so he recommended ubiquitous fertility management to basically keep the number of people of color down in the world in Africa. And this was accepted at the Bill Gates Forum. And of course, Al Gore was attacked after that. So we only have about a minute left before break, but just explore population a little bit. So do you think that the root ideology of this is too many people, or is it a hatred of humanity? Is it that they don't even want the billion people, or is it self-loathing? How do you explain this, the root cause of this whole agenda?
Well, and by the way, Climate Depot is the go-to website for all this information, has been for years, and I commend you for creating it, Mark. The answer to your question is this is self-loathing. The Malthusians basically hate people. They think we are the blight of the earth. They lack economist Julian Simon's vision to understand that the only true scarce resource on Earth is human intelligence. And, you know, the idea of, well, we should kill this group or that group, kill all the Jews, because then our problems will be solved, Hitler says. Well, you just destroyed not only precious human beings and lives that God created, but eradicated one of the most important gene pools. How many Mozarts did you eliminate? How many Cezans, how many brilliant scientists? If we appreciated that this God-given life and human intelligence is precious, we could support twice as many people on Earth, or three times. With hydroponics, the deserts we have in this world could produce all the food we want year-round. We could produce all the movement of that food through using the abundant, and I don't think it is going to run out anytime near future, all the hydrocarbon fuels we want, which are naturally produced in the earth. We can get this. They are not fossil fuels. All hydrocarbons are manufactured in the mantle of the earth. I can demonstrate that, and I can prove it. And we are living in a very, very changeable world. It's gone through cataclysms, asteroids hitting, glacial periods coming and going. And most of the temperature issues on earth are regulated by the sun. That orange, yellow thing burning in the sky, as I say, it's not a tree ornament. It does drive, without that sun, we wouldn't be talking about life on Earth. In fact, we wouldn't be having any sight in this solar system because there'd be no light, basically. So, you know, again, this is a political agenda that is based on corrupt science.
All right, well, we'll be right back. This is Jerome Corsi we're talking to on the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. His book, The Truth About Energy, Global Warming, and Climate Change, Exposing Climate Lies in an Age of Disinformation, already an Amazon bestseller. We'll be right back after this message with more with Jerome Corsi.
You should hear what Mike Ryan's talking about.
The ABN is not anti-vaccination, nor are they pro-vaccination. They are pro-choice. Meryl, thanks for joining us.
Mike, thank you so much for having me on again. I appreciate that. Yeah,
Dr. Tess Laurie says there's no evidence that these jabs will be beneficial for children. What do you think about that?
Well, it's absolutely the case. It's actually the case for anyone under the age of 30 because they are at such a low level of risk from a COVID infection, if that even is a thing, that the only thing they're actually at risk from is the risk of the jab, not at all from the risk of the infection. And infants and young children are known to not be at risk, and most of them have already had COVID and recovered from it. So, you know, there is no benefit for them. There is only risk.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio. We are speaking this hour with Jerome Corsi, the author of The Truth About Energy, Global Warming and Climate Change, Exposing Climate Lies in the Age of Disinformation. Now, before we went to the break, Jerry, you were talking about energy, and you were making it sound as though fossil fuels were renewable. What are you talking about? We've been told, even back in the 1970s, I have a clip from 1980, Paul Ehrlich on Johnny Carson warning that the world is going to run out of oil in the next 10 years. Are there such a thing? Is our current hydrocarbons, are they fossil fuels or not? How do you weigh in on that?
They're not. Hydrocarbon fuels are manufactured in the mantle of the earth. And what my book does is prove that. So first of all, the equations that show how oil is made chemically were developed in the Weimar Republic, 20s and 30s, by a group of German chemists, led by a gentleman named Fischer, another gentleman named Tropsch, T-R-O-P-S-C-H. And what they did is they figured out that Germany had no real petroleum, no oil. And Germany had coal. And between wars, they decided they better find a way to get petroleum products because they needed airplane, aviation fuel. They needed diesel fuel for tanks. They needed gasoline. They had not enough in Germany. So the whole idea of these German chemists was to figure out how to take coal and synthesize in a laboratory or ultimately like a refinery, major plant, to make it into petroleum products. To do that, they had to understand what unlocked the chemistry of hydrocarbons. And they did. These Fischer-Tropsch equations, and I explained them in the book. I show you the sources, got references. I found the Fischer-Tropsch all thousands of pages about this because at the end of World War II, U.S. military intelligence went in and captured all this German science, and they captured and made a big point of capturing these Fischer-Tropsch equations and science because during World War II, Germany was producing a lot of its fuel for World War II, the tanks, the airplanes, etc., by these Fischer-Tropsch plants that Germany was operating all through the country. I also found a strategic bombing study where we bombed these. I have pictures, and this is my third book on these issues. A book I wrote called The Great Oil Conspiracy pointed out, I show you the pictures of the bombed Fischer-Tropsch plants. The end of the war, Germany, Battle of the Bulge, had plenty of tanks. They were still making tanks. We didn't stop their industrial capacity by all the bombing we did, but the tanks ran out of fuel. They ran out of gas, diesel fuel. Germany ran out of energy. They ran out of fuel. And that's basically how we beat them. What the key issue was that we bombed their chemical and oil plants. And if, in fact, some current writers in World War II are saying that if we had just bombed, if Germany, when starting World War II, invading Poland, if Great Britain at that point had bombed the oil fields in the Ukraine and other areas, Germany would never have been able to fight World War II. I believe that's correct. Now, the point is, if you think about it for a second, I'm going to give you just one real, I want this idea to stick in your head. And that is when people die, we decompose. That's why people are embalmed. That's why we bury people. They're going to stink. And when they stink, what happens is we put them in caskets and we bury them. But they do not line the caskets expecting the person to turn into oil. In the terms of second law of thermodynamics, which has to do with energy and entropy, basically, if any living tissue dies, the energy that keeps it growing and vibrant dies, and the tissue returns to its original chemical decomposition. The Bible does not say dust onto oil. It says dust onto dust. We turn into ashes. Now, again, originally they said it was dinosaurs. Well, that was such a silly idea because how many dinosaurs does it take to make a barrel of oil? That was the kind of question I was asking even as a child. But the point is, you can't get biologic material to form oil. Our scientists, our petrogeologists, even today, think that oil is produced by sedimentary rocks from rotting ancient, whether it's plankton or biological material or plants or whatever they think. They think it's got to be organic. Now, various scientists who caught on to this idea way longer before me, and I document all of this in the book, were able to, for instance, explain how the inner Earth, the mantle of the Earth, has the temperature, the pressure, has the right elements, because these Fischer-Tropsch equations say if they take something with hydrogen, something with carbon, in the form of a catalyst like iron, you get a catalytic conversion process where the hydrocarbon chains are produced. Hydrocarbon chain is, for instance, HC4, which is methane. It's hydrogen and carbon, then it depends upon how many atoms of each go into the molecule. But hydrocarbon chains are produced in the mantle of the Earth, and we know that because in the bottom of the oceans, deep in the oceans, where there's no light, there are these hydrotherm chimneys, and out of the Earth bubbles hydrocarbon fuels. We know they were made by the Fischer-Tropsch process in the mantle of the Earth because the Woods Hole Oceanographic Group, which is a very credible deep ocean research group, they went down to those chimneys, they sampled the hydrocarbons, and they wrote an article in Science saying these hydrocarbons were produced by the Fischer-Tropsch process. So again, if people would just think about it and not be, again, you know, fossil fuels is not like green energy. You know, oil is dirty. It's slimy. People say, oh, but you know, wind is beautiful. The sun is lovely. So these have to be good for us. The point is, carbon dioxide is a trace element. Carbon dioxide is only about 4% of 0.04, 0.004% of the greenhouse gases. Major greenhouse gas, 70% of the greenhouse gases are water vapor, and they account for about 90% of the greenhouse gas effect on Earth. In fact, the carbon dioxide is like, it's almost unmeasurable how small the impact of carbon dioxide is on Earth's temperature. The major factors are clouds, water vapor, and if you think about it for a minute, the sun is the key variable. And you can prove that because at night it gets cool. So what affects the temperature of the Earth is the sun. And these ice ages, which have occurred when there was far more carbon dioxide in the environment, are about every 100,000 years. The Earth has an egg-shaped elliptical orbit around the sun, the Milankovitch cycles, for those knowing the science. And at the most extreme, the most elliptical, when we're the farthest away from the sun, that's when the ice ages occur, because there's less sunlight on Earth. When the sun is dormant, when it's not having so many sunspots, again, we get a little ice age. It gets cool. That was measured, for instance, in 1619 to about 1719, when a group of British scientists were monitoring the sunspots on the sun. They declared it went into a dormant period, like it had, 4,000 sunspots when it normally has 40,000 in any given period. And so that was the Maunder minimum, and it's been documented. The carbon dioxide 175 million years ago was actually 7,500 parts per million of the atmosphere. Parts per million, that's minuscule. It means, and today, that's 175 million years ago. Today, it's 400 parts per million, down from 7,500 parts 175 million years ago. They say, well, but it's doubled since the Industrial Revolution. That's what the global warmers say. Yeah, it went from 200 parts per million to 400 parts per million. That's barely measurable. And plant life depends on it. Plants exude oxygen. And by the way, going back to hating people, we exhale carbon dioxide. So according to the global warmers, we are a blight on the Earth. We are destroying ourselves by breathing. There are fewer of us breathing, just like fewer cows around for the methane that they exude. So we don't need to eat meat because, again, it's destroying the Earth because of these foul hydrocarbon fuels. It is completely a prejudice that people do not know enough science and are not trained anymore in science, except because it sounds good. And it's much easier to teach people a lie than it is to teach them the truth.
Yeah, in fact, there is a UK government-funded report, 2019, I believe it was called Absolute Zero. One of the recommendations was to regulate carbon dioxide as they do asbestos. So think about what you just said. We inhale oxygen, humans exhale CO2. Human breath, there are calls now to regulate it as asbestos. Let that sink in. And then following up on that, you're talking about humans, you know, how they want to treat humans. There was a Scientific American based on a study, human pee is now a pollution problem and can significantly warm the atmosphere based on the idea that we're eating too much meat. Our urine has too much nitrogen, which creates the nitrous oxide, which is then this dangerous greenhouse gas that's rapidly warming the earth. So it's a way for them to ban meat eating, but it's also a way to demonize human urine as a climate crisis issue. So how do you, I don't know what my question is there, but what are your comments on those two things, regulating it as asbestos and human pee now being a pollution? And then also John Kerry and many others have said, this is settled high school physics. We've already resolved 19th century, the Swedish physicist, Arrhenius, how do you say this? I always mess up his name, but Arrhenius, the Swedish physicist who came up with the greenhouse gas theory, they will throw that and just say, this is settled. There's no dispute. How do you respond to that?
It's got an A and it's Arrhenius, A-R-R.
Arrhenius. I always say Arrhenius.
Arrhenius. It's all right. It's not, he was one of the, this greenhouse gas goes back to the 1800s. Look, there are greenhouse gases. It's important that there's greenhouse gases. The Earth's atmosphere is like a blanket when you go to bed. The Earth's atmosphere is the major blockage of too much infrared radiation from the sun getting into Earth. And it also, in the other sense, prevents all the irradiation, the infrared energy from going out of the Earth back into the outer space when it's dark, because that's what happens. The Earth quits absorbing infrared rays and they go back up into space from the Earth. Now, the point is, that blanket that we have, the greenhouse gases, which is mostly the action of water vapor, not carbon dioxide, is, first of all, insulating the Earth. It serves both to block infrared rays when they're coming in and to keep them here, the ones we get enough at least to warm the planet. Now, all in terms of demonizing human beings, that's the whole point of this. In fact, if you take a look at all these, we've got a bad flu, let's call it COVID, everybody locked down. It's a social control mechanism. Fear. You're all going to die because of COVID. Now, by the way, a serious plague was the Black Plague. And you got the Black Plague, you died probably within 48 hours. Nothing anybody could do at that time. Half of the population in Europe died. COVID, Yes, it has certain classes where it's been more dangerous. Older people who have compromised immune systems, but in general, it's a bad flu. And yet, what's the solution? Lockdown. Everybody has to stay in their house or you're all going to die. Okay, now we're headed towards saying, oh my God, this is really terrible. You know, the earth is going to be warmed up because all you people are burning hydrocarbon fuel. You got to lock down, stay in your homes. We're going to shut down capitalism. No, nobody's going to move. Factories are going to close. Otherwise, we all die. Now, if you can create that kind of a fear, people will do anything. And that's the idea. They're so motivated by this fear. Now, it's a fraud. It's a hoax. It's a worldwide belief in these kind of bad ideas. We're prone as human beings to do this. You know, the 1500 medieval times when they believed that Satan could get inside a woman and make her a demon. We better burn them at the stake, witches. Well, how many women that the people just didn't like for one reason or another got burned at the stake? I mean, this was a phenomenon of a worldwide insanity. And again, we're going through it again. It's very carefully orchestrated. Even Hitler knew it was easier to sell a lie. And fear is easier to sell than the truth. So again, if we get to the reality, get down to the basic reality, Earth is a changeable place. And what these Michael Mann, who did this hockey stick graph where everything was very stable, like the handle of a hockey stick, and the Earth was absorbing all the hydrocarbon. It was Goldilocks. We had just the right amount of carbon dioxide. And then we came along, people came along. We had the Industrial Revolution, and we started burning hydrocarbon fuel, and the temperature there shot up like the blade of the hockey stick. Well, that ran through Congress. That was very powerful. It was founded on faulty methodology, and a series of emails that were released out of Great Britain proved that these scientists, in their own words, doctored the data. They admitted to it amongst each other. But basically, they erased the medieval warming period, 1300s. They erased the little ice age when Napoleon's army froze to death coming out of Moscow. If you look at the pictures of George Washington crossing the Delaware, there's big ice floes that he's crossing with these boats. Well, you know, the Delaware doesn't freeze like that anymore. That was the little ice age. And again, these were erased because Michael Mann took the data and he got rid of those, so it looks flat. Our temperature, 1930s, were warmer than today. Go look at the meteorological data that's on the government websites, the government weather websites. It's documented in 1930s. Had more drought, more heat. The Dust Bowl was created in the, you know, Texas and Oklahoma area. And we were going through then that what people were saying, oh, it's the end of the world. That climate on the Earth changes. And I want to get in next, Mark, if we have some more time here, to why the dinosaurs died, because I want to demonstrate to you how changing the Earth is. And how blessed we ought to be that we have an interglacial warming period where we have hydrocarbon fuels and we can prosper as human beings. These demons, and I mean that in the satanic sense, have a desire to kill human beings, destroy capitalism, put themselves in the throne of God, and have us walk voluntarily into prison, thinking that we need to lock ourselves up because we are the blight of the earth, and that's the only way to save us. The only way to save us is for you people to die. Now, how insane is that?
Yeah, very well said. And I want to make we have to go to commercial here, but two key points of what you just said. Michael Mann's hockey stick came about because the first United Nations IPCC climate report in 1990 showed the medieval warm period correctly much warmer than current 20th century and 21st century temperatures. So there was a whole campaign, and we actually had a scientist from University of Oklahoma, David Deming, testify before the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works Committee that he got an email in the mid-1990s stating, we have to get rid of the medieval warm period. And this was in collusion with all the UN scientists. Well, a few years later, presto, they actually got rid of it because they had to change the narrative. They couldn't create a climate crisis if the medieval warm period were much warmer than today. And the same was true of the Roman warming period. And the second point I want to make before we go to break, Jerry, is that you mentioned the 1930s and the whole, you know, there's a whole movement now, the 1930s hottest heat wave. You can go to Biden's EPA and see this chart that the 1930s were catastrophically much warmer than today by every measure. There's not even a contest. There's a scientist from a university, Texas A&E, who Andrew Dessler, professor, who is now leading a charge to erase the 1930s warm period, the 1930s heat wave records. This is exactly like the hockey stick. He is going through and he is going to be denying the National Climate Assessment, the EPA reports, all of the underlying temperature data kept independently by cities. And what they want to do is go back and essentially smooth all those averages. But so we know the agenda is there. They're getting rid of the medieval warm period. They're getting rid of the 1930s heat wave. This is how they operate. If it's inconvenient to the narrative, they do whatever they need to erase it scientifically. Anyway, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're talking with Jerome Corsi, the author of The Truth About Energy, Global Warming, and Climate Change, Exposing Climate Lies in the Age of Disinformation. Number one bestseller right now on Amazon, Environmental Policy. We'll be right back after this message.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We've made a very serious discovery. If you look at CFACT, I published an article on correlation there. I guess it's a blog nowadays. But the serious discovery is there is a direct correlation between the increase in the price of postage stamps and CO2. Obviously, the increase in postage stamps is causing increasing temperatures and increasing CO2. So the solution is get the price of postal stamps down. Here's another ditty. More people get sunburned and melanoma in the summer. More people also eat ice cream cones during the summer. What does this tell you? We've got to get rid of ice cream. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist and ice cream lover, Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, reminding you to enjoy your ice cream cone and the weather before someone takes both of them away from you.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we're back. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're talking with Jerome Corsi, the author of The Truth About Energy, Global Warming, and Climate Change, Exposing the Climate Lies in the Age of Disinformation. All right, so here's a question for you, Jerry. Here we are in the year 2022. I would say you have most Republican, certainly mainstream politicians, accepting not only the climate narrative that we have a problem. And this includes the Mitch McConnells and the Kevin McCarthys in the House who say climate change is a problem and we need a solution, but we can't go as radical as the Green New Deal. But you have the Republican establishment and even many so-called skeptics accepting the energy claims that solar and wind are green and that, you know, this is the way forward. And you know, we just need to, if we subsidize it enough and we need carbon capture, let's grab the CO2 in the atmosphere and put it deep into the ground. And then you have people like Bill Gates funding university studies to huge amounts of money, who's wanting to inject aerosols into the atmosphere to block the sun, to make us cooler. And you have Joe Biden actually just referenced, we're not able to control the weather yet the other day. But how does the narrative cut across party lines? Why are there so few true skeptics of both the energy narrative and the climate narrative in office? I mean, you have a few exceptions like Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma. I think Rand Paul is pretty good on this issue. Senator Ted Cruz is very good on this issue. But overall, I've been catastrophically disappointed, not only with Republicans here, but any of the so-called conservatives in Europe. How does this movement change history and bend the narrative to their will and bring along people who should know better?
Well, Mark, I think most Republicans today are Democrat light. And I don't really view them as two parties anymore. The point is, though, that worldwide, this neo-Marxism, this will be my second book. This book I've written on energy, the current one we're talking about, Truth About Energy, Climate Change, Global Warming, is first part of a trilogy I'm calling the Great Awakening Trilogy. The second book is going to talk about the neo-Marxism, the cultural Maoism, critical race theory, identity politics. These are destructive Marxist ideologies, and they have captured all of our institutions, starting with our universities. It's a dominant theme in the universities, critical race theory. They argue things like they don't know, they can't say what a woman is. They dispute that 2 + 2 = 4. That's arbitrary to them. They want transvestites in our kindergartens teaching the children. These people are would normal eras be considered sociopathic. They're projecting their personal values onto everyone else, and their personal values are suspect. At any rate, this whole critical race theory has captured our schools, has captured our news media. My book will not be interviewed even on Fox, because I'm disputing with science and with history and politics that, you know, the global warming is happening. Well, they want to say that's accepted. We all know global. What are we going to do about it? Okay, that's again, they want you to affirm their agenda, which is basically destroy capitalism. You know, eventually it amounts to kneeling down to Satan, because basically they believe they can architect are the future of the world, and they can make it perfect if we just listen to them. Of course, but their advice seems to be rather ridiculous, because they're saying our breathing and our exhaling carbon dioxide is killing us. We're killing ourselves by breathing. Now, what kind of sense that makes, I'm not aware of. But at any rate, that's the type of logic they want us to embrace. And ultimately, should they succeed with allowing the World Economic Forum and those, the particular globalists, Bill Gates and like, to be in charge, probably the first people they will eliminate, typical in Marxist revolutions, will be the critical race theory themselves. They won't want these people around. They are useful to destroy capitalism. They are not useful to build a totalitarian state. Now, the point I want to next drive and make sure people understand is just how changeable this earth is. So first, Mark, you want to comment on what I just said about this neo-Marxism and how it's become the politically correct culture, such that if you disagree with it, you're a climate denier, probably need to be criminalized and imprisoned.
Yes, actually, I had a whole report about 2 years ago now, Identity Politics Invades the Climate Change Debate. And this is about the wokeism. And this week, first of all, a story this week from the headlines, professor from University of Maine finds the root causes of climate change are capitalism, white supremacy, and colonialism. This is a paleoecologist, a plant ecology at the School of Biology and Ecology, University of Maine, claiming this. Now, it's not that unusual, because last year we had, or 2 years ago now, we had NASA lead scientist Dr. Kate Marvel link climate change to white supremacy. We'll never head off climate catastrophe without dismantling white supremacy. She called for climate and racial justice. Same year, we had NASA climate scientist Dr. Peter Kalmus. Race justice and climate justice are one and the same. Oppressive, extractive plutocracies that colonize and kill black bodies and colonize and kill our planets are one and the same. So now we have two leading major NASA scientists, multiple university. In fact, Jerry, I just want to say this. There's a University of Rhode Island professor who says you can't trust the scientific data because the data is racist. So I just wanted to say what you're saying is spot on. And would you comment on that? We now have NASA scientists saying that white supremacy is the core cause of global. And the theory behind this is our country was founded by slave-holding, racist, white, you know, founding fathers, and we presided over an industrial revolution that's raped and pillaged the earth, and we oppress minorities. That's their premise of this whole thing.
Well, those who know science and object to the global warming craze because they know it's bad science are being driven out of universities. They're being driven out of the media. We're going into a very, very dark era, and I'm not sure it's recoverable. I wrote this book. It may be, I'm trying to write, you know, I'll be 76 this month, and I'm trying to write some legacy books that I think will not fully be read until after I'm long gone. This hysteria has to pass. Eventually, people burn enough women at the stake that they decide that this was a crazy idea. We better stop doing it, or we're not going to have any children left. And so they stop it. Well, this will stop too. But the climate change movement is getting very, very close. And certainly, I write three chapters of this book to show how the neo-Marxists have taken over the environmental movement, which was really first a Malthusian movement. Paul Ehrlich, population bomb, too many people were using up the resources of the earth. By the time Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets a hold of it, she's going to be close to saying just outright, we won't stop climate change until we end capitalism. And that's what the decarbonization movement's about.
Yeah, in fact, we've had George Monbiot, the advisor to Greta Thunberg in Europe, and the UK environmentalist, wrote for the UK Guardian, literally say, we cannot get rid of climate change until you go to the heart of capitalism and kill it, but drive a stake through the heart of capitalism. He just this week, by the way, again, this is a key advisor to Greta Thunberg, called for the end of all animal agriculture globally. And I know you had another point to make, but just real quick, if you can give us a quick summary of your views on what's happening to agriculture. Why is China buying up land? There's worry that it's a monopoly of Chinese monopoly of farmland. But then again, Bill Gates, it's not a monopoly because Bill Gates is competing and Bill Gates is winning. Bill Gates is the single largest farmland owner. He's pushing fake meat. Canada has just announced they're going after modern agriculture under Justin Trudeau. Australia is doing it to save the Great Barrier Reef. They're banning agriculture, decimating farming. Poland, Albania, Sri Lanka has done this, the Netherlands. What's your comment on what you see happening with our food supply?
Well, they're going to demonize our food supply just like they've demonized our breathing. And the whole idea is to control the food supply, because if you really eat anything but insects, you're going to be destroying yourself, because you'll be the cause of climate change. And that destroys us all, because you're going to burn up the earth by eating. We're the blight. No matter what we do, we are their problem. The basic movement has become the original Malthusians. The earth would be a great place except for the people. If we just get rid of the people, we'd have a great place here. They'd never want to eliminate themselves. And then, Ehrlich had studied, his PhD was on butterflies. I don't recall anything Ehrlich ever wrote that said there were too many butterflies. There were too many people. And we're in a craze where people are being convinced that it's good that they lock down. It's good that a bunch of us die. It's good that there are fewer of us. Yeah. These are insane ideas. Because what we need to be a productive world, God does not say, God says, go forth and multiply, prosper. Doesn't say go forth and kill your babies and make sure the old people die in nursing homes where they're not allowed to be visited by their relatives and friends and family. From a disease that's really a bad flu and recoverable by most people. And, again, the fear factor is what these demons, and I mean that in the biblical sense of demons, I mean Satan. It's an idea that we can rule the world. God doesn't want you eating that fruit because he doesn't want you knowing what he knows. If he's dead. You can eat the fruit. He's not here. I'm here. Listen to me. We'll rule this place and we'll make it work. Yeah, well, you'll make it a prison. You'll make it a totalitarian nightmare. You'll make anybody who thinks and dares to express an opinion, you'll make them go away in a concentration camp. You'll demonize any intelligent group of people because they are a risk to you. We've played this game before with Hitler, with Stalin, with Mao. And if you've never been in a communist country, I'd like you to go visit some communist country that's been liberated and find out what the people there think of communism. It is not a particularly pleasant place to live under. And the people who are bringing it about, in critical race theory, will be the first to go. They will be eliminated immediately because they're not useful except to destroy. If they destroy capitalism, they've done their job. Now the Bill Gateses can take over. Yes. Go ahead, Mark.
All right. Well, we have about 4 minutes left, 3.5 minutes. And I know you had another point to make after essentially you were talking about identity politics and Marxism, but go ahead and I want you, anything else you have left to say about the book, and you have about 4 minutes total, 3.5 minutes now, 3 minutes.
Well,
go ahead and sum up.
The key point is how changeable the earth is. The global warmers would like to think it's stable except for the Industrial Revolution. There were 5 major extinctions on Earth before human beings ever got here. We've been here maybe 10 million years. The Earth is 4.6 billion years old. As far as the Earth is concerned, we're just the latest creatures walking around on the surface. But 5 other versions of creatures on the surface that are gone. Dinosaurs were here for 100 million years. The Earth is not running its temperature to make human beings feel comfortable. It just happens that right now in an interglacial period, we do very well as human beings. We prosper. We don't do so well in ice ages, which somehow or other these demons seem they want to bring back or get the place colder. At any rate, the dinosaurs went away 65 million years ago. It happened in a series of cataclysms. A asteroid hit the Yucatan in the Gulf of Mexico, which was literally a huge asteroid. It sent tsunamis all the way up to North Dakota that day. And in fact, the scientists who watch the Discovery Channel are looking at that strata from the day of the asteroid hitting, and they're finding fish that didn't belong in North Dakota who died by being impaled by wood and other flying splinters. It's being documented right today on TV. You can watch it. Secondly, we had 1,000 years or more of this, what they call the Deccan volcanism, volcano activity in India. Now, this was massive. Some of the largest features on Earth, which most people don't know, for instance, there's like originally 600 square miles, huge territory in this India, in the area around India, it's all volcanic rock, because for more than 1,000 years these volcanoes were erupting. Now that triggered about 65 million years ago, right about the same time the asteroid is hitting. The volcanoes threw sulfur oxide into the atmosphere. Sulfur oxide blocks the sun. Photosynthesis on Earth, the plant life, which depends upon the sun energy being turned into plant food as well. So a process that involves carbon dioxide, by the way, that was gone, largely. The dinosaurs, you know, Tyrannosaurus Rex ate meat, but most of these dinosaurs ate vegetables, they ate plants, and they were gone.
All right, we got it. Thank you. We're out of time here, Jerry. Thank you so much for joining our program. Get the book, The Truth About Energy Global Warming by Jerome Corsi. Thank you. This is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.